More children are being diagnosed with autism spectrum and attention deficit disorders. These children have difficulty learning and making social connections, so it's particularly challenging when they start school. Occupational therapist Diana Henry specialises in practical exercises to help autistic children, their parents and their teachers. She's currently in Australia to host a series of workshops, and she joins me now. Welcome to Life Matters, Diana.
Thank you. I feel very welcomed.
That's good. So give us an example of your therapy. You're an occupational therapist, and you recommend exercises for autistic children, don't you? Can you give us some idea? At what age do you start?
Yes. As an occupational therapist, I've been one for 35 years, over 35 years now. And so there are a lot of different ways that one can approach this. There's a lot of different education that goes on and different expertise. My expertise is in sensory integration. So I started off really working in doing research with my mentor back in the 70s when there were only very few programs for children with autism. Started a program in her backyard, and we built tree houses and swings and did a lot of things in the natural environment. That then evolved into a school, which is now called the Children's Center in Arizona. Then I went off and did for some more studies and opened up my clinic in 84. And in the clinic setting, it's very specialized in what's called sensory integration intervention, or OTSI, where you have specialized equipment and that have suspended equipment. You have specialized ways and techniques of working with the kids. From there, I evolved to starting to work in the schools because I realized that it was great what we were doing in the clinic, but then the children spent a lot of time in the schools. And I went to observe one of my clients at one point in the early 80s, and the child said, "This is great in the clinic, but you know, can you help my teacher understand that when I'm rocking in my chair, it's not my fault? Or when I fall out of my chair, instead of being reprimanded as a behavior, helping the teachers realize that it's not a behavior problem, it's really a brain issue. And there's some really good things that they could do." So I started working with trying to translate the medical terminology into everyday layman's terminology. And that's what my workshops are all about. It's bringing what we do in the medical field, bringing it to the educational world. And I found, and even yesterday was the first day of one of my workshops, that the teachers that attended here were so excited to know there are tools that we can use in our classroom.
Give us some idea of those tools, Diana.
Well, yeah, there's, you know, first of all, it's really important to evaluate, to assess. And that's been an important piece of this. You can't just guess and say, oh, that child needs this. But after the assessment where the whole team comes together, there is a format called Quick Tips where people can look at different possibilities. And then in their own space, they say, oh, you know, well, the child needs some information, some muscle work, because they're very low tone, they're very floppy. And so, you know, in my preschool, we have jobs, so I could give the child jobs to do, such as carrying water bottles out to the recess and playground. And that heavy work will be integrated into their muscles and help them to calm down and help them to get stronger. And at the same time, it's just part of what we do in our day. Mm-hmm. I just worked with a student last month in Arizona who was a child who had difficulty falling out of his chair, and he was always either sitting on his leg or standing up, and he was always being reprimanded, sit down on your seat. Mm. Well, the result of the testing showed that his balance and movement system, or what we call the vestibular system, was very under-responsive. And much like children who take stimulant medication, that you think, well, why would you give a child who has, you know, who's very active a stimulant? This is the same idea, is that the movement input is stimulating that part of the brain that is actually underactive. Mm-hmm. And so this wiggly child, we put him on a, what we call a chair ball. It's like a big therapy ball with little feet on it. And the just natural movements on that allowed him to be able to sit and attend. And he actually said to me, oh, I can write better when I'm sitting on the ball.
Diana Henry is our guest on Life Matters at the moment. She's an occupational therapist who's conducting a series of workshops here in Australia with various exercises to treat kids with autism and attention deficit disorders. So it's looking into the brain-body connection. Is that right, Diana? And working out a physical activity that might enable that connection.
Angela, I'm quite impressed with you. Exactly. That's absolutely right. Yes. And I think the more we know in every field is that that brain-body connection is very, very important. So, for example, one of the big, I'm very into systems change and helping people reframe ideas. In the United States, there is a very big push in education to do reading, writing, and arithmetic now. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, they're taking away recess, they're taking away play, they're taking away playground. There's a reframing that happens when I start to work with the teachers to realize that instead of saying, oh, well, we'll do movement at the end of the day, because right now we have to do reading, writing, and arithmetic, is to say, no, if you do the movement at the very beginning of the day, you'll get that brain-body connection, and the body will be able to sit and attend because the brain will be alert and awake.
Mm-hmm. And so parents obviously need to be in on this as well as teachers, don't they? Is it a combined approach?
Absolutely. And I think that that's one of the biggest challenges. And sometimes, you know, even here, I've heard some OTs even here, there's a sort of the old way was that medical model where you had separate professions doing their own thing. But I'm very much into collaboration. And I say to the OTs here who said, why have parents there? You know, we want you to just speak to us. And I said, no, it's so important for parents to hear and for you to hear what their challenges are at home and at school and with their teachers. And it's important for you to hear what the teachers are saying and to learn from each other. Because even though we all have our areas of expertise, we all have our own glasses, our own perspective, and we can certainly learn from each other. A lot of what I teach in my workshops is from what teachers have taught me, I must say. Mm-hmm. And it just makes it that much richer. And that's what pushed me to develop the sensory processing measure so it would bring everybody in.
Diana, I know a lot of children with autism have problems with language and also social skills. Does this kind of therapy help in those areas?
Well, I think, you know, not to say it's the only thing, it's a piece of the puzzle. So when you do an assessment with a child with autism, you look at all the different components that are a problem. So certainly you would want to have a speechie there to help you out with the language component. But speechies who attend my workshops will say, remind your audience that a lot of these activities also help to enhance oral motor development and language development. So it's a piece of the puzzle because not everything is related to sensory, but we all have behaviors. And the question is there a sensory piece driving the behavior? And if there is, that's when I would come in with some of these activities to address the sensory piece. So, you know, a child who doesn't like the feel of his shorts or the tag on the shirt isn't going to be able to pay attention very well. You change that, you change the clothing, you change the demands, and the behavior will change. Mm. So it's, again, that whole important piece of evaluating what is going on.
And how do you find that out from a child who's not necessarily good at expressing such things, that, you know, the fabric of his clothing is making him uncomfortable and restless?
You have really good questions, Angela. Yeah. Well, first of all, parents are usually pretty good at reading their child's language, and that's why sometimes the child may not show the behavior at home, but they show it at school. You know, that's often one of the frustrations that the typical assessments in the old days would have, is you give different assessments at home than you do at school, and then it's like, who's right? You know, who's telling what? And I think if you talk to teachers and therapists, they'll often say kids are different at home, at school. This assessment, when we did the standardization of it, we did it across home and school. And so what happens is you now are able to see, wow, you know, at school, he's all over the place. He's just not able to attend, but at home he is. So let's look at what is it about home that the parents are doing. And parents are really smart. You know, they try to really support their child, even if it's a gut kind of thing. What are they doing at home that we could bring to school, or vice versa? Sometimes school kids are great at school and they just fall apart at home. So what is it about school that we can bring in? Or maybe they're having a hard time in the main classroom, but in music, they're doing beautifully. What is it about the music? Is it the way the teacher is? Is it that they're using music and rhythm that helps them stay focused? Is it that they get to play a musical instrument? That's what the sensory processing measure helps to do, is to bring that together to then learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. Diana, I understand you're working on a book about sensory problems called Forever Winter.
Yes.
What's the significance of that title?
Yes, this is actually a book. I'm co-writing this with a teacher who's a teacher in sixth grade who has sensory processing disorders and was labeled with nonverbal learning disabilities. Oftentimes these children and adults are thought of to have Asperger's. Anyway, she wrote a book about her. I came to find out when she asked me to first look at it, I was crying, and I called her and I said, "Debbie, what is this? This is so sad." She said, no, keep reading. It's good. It'll be a good ending." Anyway, it was the story of her life, about being bullied at school because of her sensory problems, and teachers not understanding, and kids picking on her because she had a lot of social skills problems. So what we're doing is we took her story, and I left her story the way it is. It's a beautiful story. But then I interjected explanations as footnotes and comments on the side, explaining when her mother's trying to comb her hair and she's screaming, you know, that you would think, I mean, some typical kids, I mean, I know, you know, sometimes it hurts and you go, ow, but really having these rages, realizing that it's related to the sensitivity of the touch system. Explaining and then talking about some of the things that could be done, mm, that should have been done for Debbie that wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I look forward to it. Diana, thank you so much for joining us on Life Matters today.
Thank you so much, Angela. This has been a lot of fun. I feel very honored. Thank you.
Thank you. Diana Henry is an occupational therapist, and she's currently visiting Australia, conducting a series of workshops across the country with practical exercises to treat people with autism and attention deficit disorders, and we'll put a link to all the workshops on our website.